From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we examine the first law designed to regulate information on the Internet. The Communications Decency Act, part of the sweeping telecommunications law, outlaws indecent materials knowingly distributed to minors on the net. We'll hear from an obscenity lawyer who helped write the bill. He says it will protect our children from harmful information. And we'll hear from a specialist in new technologies and civil liberties issues who's joining in a suit against the act. He says it's unconstitutional and is the first step in undermining the open and interactive nature of the net. And we'll talk with the manufacturer of software that enables parents to regulate their children's access to the net. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Frank Stacio. The co-chair of Republican presidential hopeful Pat Buchanan's campaign is stepping aside following reports he's associated with white supremacists. Larry Pratt is director of Gun Owners of America. Reports that he has been an advocate of militia movement in the United States led to his resignation today. Pratt reportedly has appeared at speaking engagement with Aryan Nation leaders, prominent militia chiefs. The Big Eight debate tonight in Manchester, New Hampshire. The entire field of GOP presidential hopefuls meet face-to-face in a 90-minute nationally broadcast debate. Political experts say the event is likely to feature attacks on frontrunner Bob Dole, whose closest rival is Pat Buchanan. Dole says he's not worried about Buchanan, although he does plan to be alert. The FBI is on the scene of a Burlington Northern train derailment in St. Paul, Minnesota. 44 cars and 6 locomotives left the track early this morning, injuring several people, and the railroad suspects sabotage. From Minnesota Public Radio, Mark Zedeklik reports.
9 people were hurt when the Burlington Northern train crashed into a railroad office building in St. Paul, taking with it several Canadian Pacific train cars and locomotives. Burlington Northern spokesman Dick Russick says the railroad called in the FBI to help investigate the derailment because a preliminary inspection indicates there may have been foul play.
There are aspects of the train that you look at to see if everything is the way it's supposed to be, and our folks suspect that there was some tampering with the train, and that is the reason why they called in the FBI.
Russick declined to comment further on exactly what type of sabotage the railroad suspects. For National Public Radio, this is Mark Zedeklik in St. Paul.
Jury selection is underway in the assisted suicide trial of Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Jerome Vaughn of member station WDET reports from Pontiac, Michigan.
The search for jurors began in earnest this morning after a 3-day delay in trial proceedings. Oakland County Judge Jessica Cooper is today questioning potential jurors about their news consumption habits and whether they've already formed an opinion on the assisted suicide issue. Dr. Jack Kevorkian is charged with breaking Michigan's now-expired assisted suicide law in 2 1993 deaths. Kevorkian admits being present at 27 deaths since 1990. Barring complications, opening arguments should begin early next week. For National Public Radio, this is Jerome Vaughn in Pontiac, Michigan.
Police in London today deactivated a bomb in the city after receiving coded warnings. No one has claimed responsibility. The discovery came 6 days after the Irish Republican Army ended a 17-month ceasefire with a bomb in London last week that killed 2 people and caused millions of dollars in damage. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 6 points at 5573.77, volume 328 million shares. In over-the-counter trading, the Nasdaq Composite Index is up 1.5 points. This is NPR News. China is blaming the United States for intensifying the tensions in Taiwan by selling weapons to the Taiwanese. The statement comes one day after Defense Secretary William Perry says China must stop intimidating Taipei. On Taiwan today, the presidential campaign that China is accused of trying to subvert went to the front lines of the confrontation. NPR's Julie McCarthy reports.
President Lee Teng-hui traveled to Kinmen Island. Skirmishes that took place there between the communists and nationalists over the years have made it something of a hallowed territory to Taiwan. It lies only 1 mile off mainland China. and a large-scale military maneuver is expected to be launched nearby when Chinese troops begin their war games after the Lunar New Year next week. We are seeking international stature for the survival of our nation and the dignity of our people, Lee told soldiers stationed on the island. The Defense Ministry, meanwhile, reported continued mainland troop movement along the coast facing Taiwan in preparation for the exercises. The tense standoff has polarized political opinion in Taiwan, while polls indicate President Lee, a target of Beijing's harsh criticism, remains the clear frontrunner. Support may be slipping. In Taipei, this is Julie McCarthy.
Doctors say the surgery was a success and the patient, Gary Dockery, is doing well, having come out of a coma and survived an operation to remove fluid from his lungs. A Chattanooga, Tennessee police officer began speaking to his family this week for the first time in 7 years after going into a coma with a gunshot wound to the head. His condition worsened, and doctors said he would need surgery, but warned the anesthetic could cause a relapse. Dr. Dockery is now in intensive care at a Chattanooga hospital. Searchers today say they've located the flight recorder of a jetliner that crashed last week, killing 189 people. Operations are now underway to recover it. I'm Frank Stacio, NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This month, the president signed the first bill specifically designed to regulate information on the Internet. The Communications Decency Act, a statute within the new telecommunications law, makes it a federal crime to knowingly transmit indecent information to minors on the Internet. The penalty is up to 2 years in prison and $500,000 in fines. Supporters of this new act hail it as a way to restrict our children's access to offensive sexual material. Opponents point out that transmitting obscene material such as child pornography is already against the law. They argue that outlawing indecent material on the Internet, for instance what we commonly refer to as the seven dirty words, is unconstitutional and that regulating speech is antithetical to what the Internet represents. We'll be hearing from both sides on today's show, and from the manufacturer of software that enables parents themselves to regulate their children's access to the net. First, our cyber commentator Stephen Levy, who covers the computer world for Newsweek, has an overview of the story. I asked him to explain why this is such a significant issue in cyberspace.
Well, you have to realize the Internet has been going on pretty much as an unregulated phenomenon. And some people think that's the real strength of it. This is the success story of the 20th century where out of nowhere people have built this amazing communications medium. The question is, do there need to be restraints on what happens there? Is this free-for-all too much? Now, some people are really concerned about what they call cyber porn and bad pictures being sent over there. Some people talk about child pornography. And other people just feel that the level of discourse is excessive. So I think the attempt to regulate that has clashed with what some people think is the First Amendment right to free expression. They feel the Internet is a perfect example of how people can engage in a marketplace of free ideas, and they think that the Communications Decency Act stops that pretty much cold.
How do the sides break down on this act, and where is the battle being fought?
Well, the people for it, I guess, are the folks who are associated in some part with the Christian right, with, quote, family values. And the Congress, I think, believes that most Americans want to see some sort of restraint on speech on the Internet because they voted for it so overwhelmingly. Opposed to it are the civil rights people, civil liberties groups, and anyone who pretty much is involved in the Internet. You see universal contempt for this law on the postings on the Internet.
What are the questions people have now about how this new legislation will be applied and enforced?
Well, that is really the big question. Some people say that, uttering one single expletive on the Internet, whether on a bulletin board or a piece of email that someone forwards or something appearing on your web page, John Updike, for instance, including a word in one of his short stories and posting it to the web page, could bring you 2 years in jail and a $250,000 fine. And it's not clear really whether that's the case or not. It seems a little unlikely. But the way the law reads, it's possible. So I think that we really don't know how it will be interpreted. I think one key phrase in there is whether you make things available to a minor. in when you post what is known as indecent speech. Well, on the internet, it's not clear, again, what that means. Are you protected if you put a disclaimer in front of your posting or on your webpage saying, hey, if you're under 18, don't read this? Or, you know, do you have to take other measures? Some of the online services are specifically protected if they take certain measures to protect their users. And CompuServe, for instance, is using some screening software that's available to parents, and they have certain safeguards built in that they feel pretty confident is going to protect them, because there were some things written specifically in this law to make sure that internet access providers, the people who give you the wires to get on the internet, or the online services, won't be responsible for every single word published by their users.
Is there now something we could call a cyber lobby?
Well, I think there is. Unfortunately, it's just for them. They're just really learning the ropes, and they haven't, you know, had the heritage of access to power, of fundraising, the other aspects that telecommunications industry had in jiggering this bill to get what they want. The broadcast industry, the cable industry, the phone industries got pretty much what they wanted from this bill, yet the internet only got this form of regulation. So I've been talking to some of the people in that budding internet lobby, and they say to each other, well, this is a wake-up call. We have to do better here.
Stephen Levy writes about computers and technology for Newsweek. Bruce Taylor supports the Communications Decency Act, which outlaws indecent material distributed to minors on the internet. He advised the senators who wrote the amendment. He's the president of the National Law Center for Children and Families. He formerly worked in the Justice Department as a senior trial attorney in the Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section. He's prosecuted many state and federal obscenity jury cases. Taylor says that critics of the act overstate the impact it will have on adults' ability to communicate on the net.
It's only a crime under this statute if a person knowingly, in the definition you give a jury for knowingly, is an intentional act that's not a mistake or an accident. So if someone knowingly and intentionally sends indecent, patently offensive material to a person under 18, they violated the act. Or if they knowingly send it for display in a manner that they know is available to minors, then they are violating the act. Two things have to go into that. One, yeah, you have to know it's going to children, but two, you have to be sending material that would be indecent or patently offensive here. That, you know, the ability of parents or adults to communicate indecently with each other is not affected by this act, other than because some adults may want to put their material up there without any restrictions on it, and they want to post it on the anywhere on the internet, is no different than the ACLU saying, well, I want to put Hustler centerfolds on a billboard on the side of the road or in the front window of my store or on the radio or television. The law can restrict adults' methods of providing their information as long as those methods are not so unreasonable as to prevent the speech from getting out at all.
What kind of restrictions are available now that you could put on adult communication?
Well, there are some that are available now, and there are some that are technically possible and will be available soon or could be implemented any minute by the computer access companies and the server owners. One of the ways that it's available now is by email. If I'm an adult and I send something to another adult in an email, because those emails are protected by law, no one can get into them, the government needs a warrant, it's a crime for anybody else to break in or steal your unopened email, therefore, just like using the U.S. mails, anything you put in an email message from one to another is going to, by definition, exclude children, therefore you've communicated to adults without any risk that kids are going to get it. The other way is to post your materials on areas of the servers or on the net or on the World Wide Web where there are restricted access provisions. In other words, the online service companies like America Online or Prodigy or CompuServe could very easily, and I hope that they do this, create adult access boards and minor access boards so that when you subscribe and you get online, you have, if you have a credit card or an adult PIN number from someplace that would identify you as an adult, they can give you access to the adult boards or the unrestricted boards. And if you don't have a credit card or one of those adult PIN numbers, then you could be restricted from reaching those adult boards but could still go anyplace else on the net. That would allow any user sitting at home who's an adult, if they wanted to post graphic pictures out of Hustler or something that was pornographic, they could put it on one of the adult restricted boards, and they know that kids wouldn't get it. And that wouldn't be too much of, to ask for an adult any more than saying, if you're going to sell Playboy or Penthouse, put them up on a top rack, put a shrink wrap cover, put them behind the counter. Adults can still get them, but kids don't.
Now, what about the World Wide Web? You don't need an online service to have access to the World Wide Web. How do you expect the government to regulate indecent material on the World Wide Web, with which people have access to around the world, without a screener like an online service?
Federal laws in this country apply only within the United States. And so they apply to the U.S. citizens. We can't control what other people can do, but we can control what we do here. And if we want to protect our children, we can't, you know, require that people in foreign countries protect their children. However, it is possible for adults to have a computer system on the Internet that does have adult and minor access or restricted access to that kind of material that you don't, you shouldn't want to give to kids. I mean, I don't know why anybody would want to give that kind of hard, you know, very explicit, offensive kind of material to children. I mean, to be indecent, we're not talking about Catcher in the Rye or AIDS education or frank discussions of sex and sex ed classes. That's not the kind of material that anybody that I know, nor any court that I've ever been in, federal or state, would consider indecent. And so that the only people that I've ever heard say that AIDS information or sex education materials like they're talking about in the schools or classic works of literature or the Sistine Chapel, Rubens paintings, the only people saying that stuff is indecent is the ACLU and the Electronic Frontier and the all of these people who want to legalize pornography and make it available to everybody. I mean, I think they're the ones who are crazy because they're the only ones that think this is offensive. No one else does. So I think they're scaring people into taking off material that is protected, that wouldn't be subject to prosecution, wouldn't be restricted by this law. But to the extent that our government can say, you should set up a system where adults can talk to each other, but they don't infringe or they don't have the right to use the Internet as a way to exclude children or make it so that kids can't go on there without bumping into offensive material. We do that in every other facet of American life. We do it to stores, theaters, businesses, schools, and homes. We can do it to the Internet, and I don't think that's too much to ask.
Adults already have the ability at home to screen the Internet for their children. There is already software available to do that. So, I mean, can't we say that you don't need the government to worry about that? You know, parents can just take care of that themselves.
And we think those programs are a great idea. As a matter of fact, every time I've spoken in the last 8 months, I've said there are three things that have to be done if you're going to try to protect children. You need a combination of government, industry, and parents. You need a good law. You need industry to cooperate by developing technology, hardware, software, and restricted and unrestricted areas that people can use. And you also need parents to fill in the gap. You can't expect the law nor the industry to protect your kids from everything. Under this bill, the computer access providers are not liable for something that's on a facility they don't control. So America Online's only going to be liable for America Online's own chat lines and bulletin boards and services they offer. And if you go through America Online and go off onto the Internet someplace and you bump into something that's illegal, obscenity, child pornography, or, you know, indecency, America Online is not going to be responsible under this bill if your child bumps into indecency on someone else's facility. So there is something friendly there that it helps the industry grow, but it also means that parents are going to have to fill in the gap with these software provisions. But just because parents have the right or the ability, apparently, to screen out most of the stuff on their individual computer doesn't mean that that's going to protect all of our children. Not only does it mean that we have to trust that the software is going to work, but it also means that where are these softwares going to be installed? Yes, I can put one on my computer, but will my school do it? You've got plaintiffs in this lawsuit that are complaining about that they might not have the right to give students unrestricted access to hardcore and sexually explicit material on the Internet. It's clear that there are some people who won't be responsible and won't put these kinds of software programs in. And just like there are stores that say, I don't want to take the porno magazines off the shelves, a parent's only choice is to say, well, we're not going to let our kids go in those stores. I don't think kids should be restricted from the Internet. They have a right to use it. And I think if adults have to just hold back the most offensive of their speech from the presence of children, and there are ways that adults can still get it to other adults, that's a good compromise so that we can at least allow our children the same right to this Internet that we're claiming to have.
My guest is Bruce Taylor, the president of the National Law Center for Children and Families. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Bruce Taylor, president of the National Law Center for Children and Families, he supports the new Communications Decency Act, which outlaws the use of the Internet to distribute indecent material to minors. Do you think that this is going to practically result in a lot of indecent material being taken off the net because there is no way of assuring that it won't be used by minors?
No, I don't think that. And I think there will be some indecent material that will be taken off the public areas of the net. I hope that a lot of the hardcore obscenity gets taken off anyway, because that's a crime and no one even has a defense to that. So a lot of the alt-sex bestiality and alt-sex group sex type of pictures that are up there, those shouldn't be there anyway. I mean, if those are obscene, they're not supposed to be there. But for indecent material, there are some material. Hustlers and Playboy and Penthouse's web pages or their services should not be available for free for any kid. They should ask for a credit card or a PIN number. It's not too much to ask. They shouldn't be posting free centerfold pictures up there to tease people and making those available to minors. I think, however, that the kind of materials that the ACLU lawsuit says they're afraid are indecent is a fraud on the public, because they are not complaining about Hustler centerfolds like the courts are going to be finding indecent. They are scaring Sister Mary Elizabeth and the computer teachers, you know, access counselors and AIDS crisis awareness people and writers union people into thinking that their materials are indecent, when I don't think, and the courts are not going to think, and the definition doesn't apply to most of these materials.
Say you're a 16-year-old and you're surfing the net looking for information about safe sex. Or say you think you might be gay and you're surfing the net looking for an interesting discussion about homosexuality, about gay literature. This bill wouldn't have anything to do with that.
Yes, this bill has nothing to do with the topics or the subject matter of your discussions. The Supreme Court has held in the Seven Dirty Words case that everybody talks about, the George Carlin case. It's called FCC versus Pacifica. That was 1978. The Supreme Court said to be indecent, material has to be a patently offensive representation of a sexual organ or activity, but it also isn't taken in a vacuum. It has to be taken in the context that it's used, the message, the audience, the show, whether children are there, whether it's done for shock value. You consider the factors just like you do with obscenity. And people say, well, I don't know what's obscene either. Well, the Supreme Court said adults have to live with some kinds of restrictions for obscenity, even though everybody may have a different opinion of what it is. But same thing with indecency. It's not just what one parent might think is patently offensive. It's what the entire country's, you know, the court system would figure is patently offensive in the context that it's used. Therefore, and then the Supreme Court in another case involving a school, and I was an amicus in that case, and I didn't contest support the school's version. I said these laws are not harmful to matters laws and indecency laws are not designed to restrict the type of speech you can engage in. In other words, it's not the political message or the social or artistic or sexual politics you're arguing. That can't be banned from children. It is the pictures or the words you may use to describe your politics that could be indecent. And the Supreme Court agreed, and they said you cannot ban books or you cannot restrict from children subject matters like discussions of gay rights or politics or Nazi concentration camps or anything else, but you could require that adults refrain from discussing those topics in indecent language or in with offensive pictures. And so that's all that this bill would require of adults, is that you can have chat sessions about safe sex and gay politics all you want, but if you wanted to show a child a picture of two men engaging in anal intercourse or something, that might be something that most adults would feel is something that should be done only with adults, unless you get the parents' permission to let that child see that kind of material.
Is this going to require online services to start policing their users?
No. What it's going to do, because they don't have to, they're only liable if they know. Most of the online services do police, and this bill was written in a way to give them immunities from the acts of others and good faith defenses, and the whole, they wanted these things. They asked for them, Congress gave them, they had no hesitation in getting them. They said, if we take self-policing, good Samaritan methods on our own, we don't want to be liable for it like Prodigy was up in a New York lawsuit, where Prodigy tried to screen out some stuff and something got through and the court found Prodigy liable and not other companies. But so Congress said, certainly, to the extent that companies want to take their own actions to screen out things they don't think are appropriate or that they would rather restrict from children, they should have an immunity, both from civil and criminal lawsuits and prosecutions. And they got that. So therefore, they got the industry pretty much got everything they wanted. They would have liked to have had the harmful to minor standard instead of indecency, but it's not really a major difference. I mean, the kind of materials the courts will find one, they would find the other, and vice versa, so that's not a big difference. The industry got everything that they said they needed in order to survive and not be liable for the acts of others, and they got protection for any good faith efforts. Just like the phone companies who don't want to carry dial-up porn don't have to, and you can't force a movie theater to play Deep Throat if it wants to play The Godfather. And so private industry has rights to restrict itself or to offer certain kinds of programming, and this bill gives them the ability to do that.
Are you concerned about a chilling effect? In other words, that some people, like online services, might start taking things out of their service, not because they think it's indecent, but because they think it might be challenged and they just want to save themselves the hassle and the money that a lawsuit involves.
I think there is going to be a lot of self-restraint, self-policing, even self-censorship, and that might be considered a prior restraint by some. Some of it will be fueled by corporations that say, I don't want to sell Playboy Penthouse in the lobby store of my hotel, and I'm not going to carry it in my chain of retail stores. And some of them are going to say, on my computer access bulletin boards on America Online, I'm not going to carry some of that. I'm not going to carry alt-sex bestiality or pedophilia. I'm not going to carry the Hustler web page unless the Hustler takes a credit card. Or I'll screen it out unless an adult gives us a credit card. So yes, I do think there's going to be a lot of that. And I also think, sadly enough, that there's going to be a prior restraint against some protected materials. Some of the material that Sister Mary Elizabeth May wants to give out about AIDS or safe sex or disease or gay politics, some of that material she will withhold from the net. Not because the law would say it's indecent, but because she's been scared by the civil liberties crowd into thinking that she's going to get arrested. And I think that's where the prior restraint's going to come in. I think that's a shame, but I think legitimate sexual materials are not going to be restricted under the law, but I think a lot of people will take a more maybe paranoid view of it and restrict more speech than they have to. But I think after a while that'll sort its way out, just like it did with museums and libraries and retail stores, and just like people in America know what you can't say on television, what you're not going to find on the shelves at the local convenience store, what you're not going to see on the theater screens at Lowe's Theater, it won't take all that long for us grown-ups to figure out what we can do and not do on the net. We're not that stupid.
Bruce Taylor is the president of the National Law Center for Children and Families. We'll hear from an opponent of the Communications Decency Act in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, and by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. Celebrating 25 years of radio excellence, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more on the debate over regulating cyberspace. We speak with Jerry Berman. His group, the Center for Democracy and Technology, is part of a coalition planning to file a lawsuit challenging the Communications Decency Act. And we talk with the head of a company that manufactures software which enables parents to regulate their children's access to the net. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the first part of our show, Bruce Taylor told us why he supports the new Communications Decency Act, which is the first law designed to regulate information on the Internet. It outlaws indecent material knowingly distributed to minors. Jerry Berman opposes the law. He's the executive director of the Center for Democracy and Technology, a civil liberties group focusing on new communications technologies. It's part of a coalition of online services, libraries, and civil liberties groups planning to file a federal lawsuit seeking less restrictive means to protect minors. The law has already been challenged in court by a coalition of groups, including the ACLU. I asked Berman how he thinks the new law could change the content on the Internet.
Well, if this law is successfully upheld in the courts, which we hope it's not, it could really go a long way to reducing the content or information on the Internet to that which is only fit for children. The Internet is this wonderful new communications medium which is allowing every person who owns a computer who will, to access a network and to become an electronic publisher around the world. A revolution is going on in communication with people talking about social life, political life, creating new communities. And it's a world which, when you put information up, it's not like a telephone call where it's one person to one person. You put information up on your worldwide website, which people are now doing, and you display it to anyone who accesses the Internet. That's going to include adults and children, and it's a worldwide network. We want adults to be able to exercise their full First Amendment rights, to be able to talk about everything from safe sex to gardening. And what this law does is create a chilling effect because it bans or makes it criminal to communicate anything that would be considered indecent to anyone under the age of 18.
Now, Bruce Taylor of the National Law Center for Families and Children, who we spoke with earlier, said that adults would still be able to transmit indecent material to each other on areas where there are restricted access provisions, through credit card, through a PIN number.
Bruce needs to spend a little more time with the technology. It is very difficult to control content at the provider level. When someone puts up a worldwide website, and we're talking about lots of individuals, there's commercial and non-commercial speech up there. They don't all have credit card transactions. They don't have password protection. They are trying to communicate widely. They are putting information up. We do not want to turn the Internet into a series of closed rooms with lots of barriers up that keep different people out. There are people who are trying to communicate to young people. They're trying to communicate to adults. Bruce's solution is everyone does a credit card. That may apply for an online service like America Online, but that's a large company that's in commercial business. Most of the people on the Internet are non-commercial, and they're putting up their own interface from their computer. I, at my home, put up my website or at my office. I don't have a credit card structure to keep people out.
What type of website exists now, or what kind of two-way communication exists now that you're concerned will be restricted if the law is enforced?
In this electronic highway or electronic cyberspace, someone puts up a website of rap lyrics because they like rap music. Some of those rap music may contain obscenities. You can go into a store today and purchase a rap music, and kids can go into stores and listen to them. But under this law, it would be impermissible to put them up on the Internet. There's a website where someone is literally putting all the banned books that have ever been banned and books that have been published and don't have copyright any longer onto the net. So just to spread the Gutenberg revolution and let people read. Well, he's worried about whether he's going to be prosecuted for putting up Lady Chatterley's Lover because some jury or some prosecutor in some part of the United States decides that an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old got a hold of that on the Internet and therefore he was communicating indecent materials to a minor.
Now, Bruce Taylor, who we spoke to earlier, said that the ACLU is scaring off educators and other net users by saying, oh, well, the Catcher in the Rye might be taken off the web, or AIDS information might be taken off the web because it would be called indecent. And Bruce Taylor maintains that type of material would not be considered indecent and would not be threatened.
As Bruce Taylor is a very good lawyer, he knows that in the middle of this legislative fight, we tried to limit this law to obscene and child pornography, because that's what his organization and Senator Exon and other sponsors of the bill were complaining about. But they rejected that. They wanted to go much more broadly and include the indecency standard, which under Supreme Court law in the television arena has covered the seven dirty words. Now, when they say poo-poo the idea of the Catcher in the Rye being prosecuted, do not take cognizance of the fact that it is not Bruce Taylor that gets to interpret this law. It is any prosecutor in any community in the United States can bring a prosecution. The publisher of Catcher in the Rye doesn't know whether someone is going to be offended by that book, and many have been offended by that book in different parts of this country. The only way that someone will know what they can put up on the net is when, after a prosecution has been brought, a jury has ruled, and they've decided that it is, quote, not indecent. That is an enormous chilling effect, because you have to hire lawyers, you have to think about prosecution, you have to be willing to go to jail. And while I think the commercial online providers will test this law, the little publisher, the individual, the small library, they are worried about the reach of this statute. They can't afford to test it.
My guest is Jerry Berman, Executive Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jerry Berman. His group, the Center for Democracy and Technology, is part of a coalition planning to file a lawsuit challenging the new Communications Decency Act, which outlaws distributing indecent material to minors over the Internet. On what grounds are you challenging the Communications Decency Act?
Well, there is a lawsuit that's been filed by the American Civil Liberties Union and others, the Center for Democracy and Technology, the American Library Association, and some of the online companies are about to file a lawsuit challenging the statute on the grounds that because parental controls and technology options are really and readily available to parents, that this statute is unconstitutional because of the existence of those technologies.
I want you to elaborate on that. What technologies are you talking about, and why would they make this law unconstitutional in your eyes?
Because under Supreme Court doctrine, when you're trying to accomplish some goal, and the laudable goal here is to protect children from materials that parents may find offensive, one way that the courts look at this, or they always look at it, is to examine the nature of the media and whether the government has chosen the least restrictive way, in other words, the least restrictive on free speech rights, to accomplish their objective. In this arena, there are technologies such as SurfWatch, NetNanny, WebTrack, a number of software packages which you can either purchase at a store or even get for free from CompuServe and America Online and as part of your service. And that SurfWatch software automatically blocks all these adult sites. Anything that might be offensive, they go out and literally look for them and block them, and they update it constantly to your computer. It's a touch of a click of a mouse, and you can block out these sites and customize what your children see. It's a very effective tool. It can knock out and keep out far more objectionable material than any law could cover. It's also absolutely necessary. I have a teenager at home, and even if the Indecency Act were in force with a whole new slew of federal bureaucrats and policemen running around prosecuting everyone, it would not protect my child, because the internet is a global network. And while our law may reach websites in the United States, it's not going to reach Sweden or Denmark. And when you look at the internet or dial it up, a website in Sweden is just as easy to access as a website in Alabama. So my kid might be not getting anything, quote, indecent from or pornographic from Alabama, but Sweden is also a mouse click away.
But the software that you put on your computer to prevent your children from accessing sexually related information isn't going to help your child when your kid goes to the neighbor's house who doesn't have the software.
I understand.
And your child can access it through the neighbors.
I understand. But nothing in that sense is foolproof in any technology. I put a block on a 900 number and my kid goes next door and someone else doesn't have that block. I have a magazine store that restricts, for example, children getting a hold of Playboy magazine, but some neighbor adult purchases it and gives it to his teenager, and my teenager goes next door and reads it. That's just part of life. We cannot shield our children from all pornography, all obscene words. Really, let's be serious as adults and as parents. We grew up in this country. We know what's out there. We know what's on primetime television. We have to involve ourselves in the education of our children. We have to be concerned about what they're accessing on a computer and how they're going through the movie lines to get to an R-rated movie down at the movie house. There's no big protection here.
You're challenging this new law along with several online services. Now, earlier on our show, we were told by Bruce Taylor that the online providers, that they got what they wanted in this bill and that the online services are happy with the new law.
I don't think the online services are happy with this law. They did not want this law. I worked very closely with them. They opposed the law. They consider it unconstitutional. And while there are defenses which are in the statute, which allows America Online to transmit material across its network and not be liable for it if it doesn't originate it. The problem is that America Online is also hosting many, is also a content provider. It hosts information. Prodigy hosts information. And it's not sure under this statute what is going to be decent and what is going to be rendered indecent. So as someone who is also putting up information, they are concerned, even though they may not be liable for someone else's content that falls outside the protection of the statute or becomes targeted by it. So the online companies are also interested in the status of the internet. It is crucial that even though they have defenses, I think they share our belief and the belief that at the core of this lawsuit that the internet should not be treated like broadcast television, where the FCC sets up rules and tries to arbitrate what content reaches children, that the internet, because it has many, many publishers, no scarcity of spectrum, and users have enormous control over what they want to access and interact with, should have all the freedoms of print. And what we're trying to establish is not that the online companies have a defense, but that the same information that's on billboards, that it's in bookstores, that's at the magazine stand, should be available on the internet. And the internet should not be treated like broadcast television or radio, where the things I'm saying to you are, we think about the indecency laws all the time because there's no way to block it out. It's a mass media. It's pervasive. We don't have the kinds of technologies that we have in the online world. And so we want to get out of the milieu and the vision or the paradigm which says that this is like a television box.
Is there any paradigm that you think applies to the internet, or do you think the internet is a brand new model and we have to figure out new legislation, new concepts altogether?
New concepts are required here. this is, I think that the internet is a very exciting experiment in speech and democracy. And we're just appalled at the performance of Congress in not holding one single hearing on this statute, not one, not compiling a factual record about what media, how this media ought to be treated, but essentially just got into the hot button, let's fight porn box and rush through this statute, perhaps crippling a new media. Ironically, doing it at the same time that it's passing a telecommunications bill, which unleashes the telephone companies and the cable companies to try and be like the internet, innovative, new, and exciting. And while they were doing that with one hand, the other hand was bringing the internet under the kind of regulatory regime which creates this high bureaucratic FCC government-dominated world which stultifies the media. We don't want that to happen to the internet.
Now, obscenity laws already apply to the internet, yes?
Absolutely.
Now, have they been enforced?
Absolutely. There's just been a recent a bust of pornography in which AOL cooperated with federal officials. There have been several prosecutions. The Justice Department did not ask for this statute. They did not come up and say, we don't have the tools to reach this child pornography.
You're saying the Justice Department didn't ask for the indecency statute.
They did not ask for the indecency statute. They did not ask for any of this regime. This was not pushed by law enforcement. This was pushed by senators and congressmen who want the government to determine what our children will see and interact with or get on a computer, who are afraid of the technology, and the Christian Coalition, which is using, thwarting a media which is very good to them because it allows them to get away from the mass media and communicate with their constituency. They're coming in here and putting the heavy hand of government on the internet, which runs counter to their message.
Now, clarify something for me. Isn't it only a crime on the internet if an adult intentionally sends indecent material to somebody under 18?
Very good point. It is not. There is one crime for intentionally communicating to someone under the age of 18, but there's the other part of the statute which makes it a crime to knowingly make it available or display the inherent quality of the internet. It's not like a telephone call where someone makes a call on a private line and says, and you're dealing with dial-a-porn. When you put something up on the internet, you display it to many, many people. And therefore, you ipso facto know or should know that a minor may access that material. If they do, you could be prosecuted.
What happens next? You're about to file a challenge to the communications decency law.
Yes, I think because anyone can be a publisher out on the net, there's going to be several lawsuits. I'm sure we're not going to be the last. There is an expedited appeal mechanism under this statute. So a district court will rule, or several district courts will rule one way or the other, on whether there's an injunction or whether the facts, who makes the argument about whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional. And in a year or two, this is going directly to the United States Supreme Court and will be a major First Amendment case in the new technology. And the Supreme Court will have to wrestle with whether the internet is a broadcast media or a communications media and find the right legal structure to reconcile free speech with other public interests.
Jerry Berman is the executive director of the Center for Democracy and Technology. Coming up, screening software for parents. This is Fresh Air. As the controversy continues over government regulation of the Internet, parents can regulate their children's use of the Internet through screening software. This week, CompuServe became the latest online service to make such software available to subscribers. CompuServe is using a version of Cyber Patrol made by Microsystems Software. There are several other companies manufacturing screening software as well. We called Microsystems President Nigel Spicer. He told me the software enables parents to limit the number of hours their children surf the net, and there's an editorial process to help parents screen materials they don't want their children to see or hear.
We have a group here of teachers and parents who are reviewing Internet sites and grading the content according to the particular material that's there. That content is then compared against about 12 or 14 major categories of nudity, violence, profanity, racism, drug culture, militancy, gambling, beer, alcohol, and wine, all sorts of different categories. And once it's categorized, then those particular parameters are put into what's called a CyberNot list, which is a component of Cyber Patrol, so that a parent can, when they install Cyber Patrol, can select the categories that they're particularly concerned about and have them either restricted or not. So, for example, if you were concerned, the issue of gambling. If you lived in Nevada and you were employed in the casino industry, you might think it entirely appropriate that your children have access to material about gambling. If you lived next door in Utah, you might think that it was really rather terrible and you'd wish to restrict that. So what Cyber Patrol does is to try and deliver back to parents the opportunity to specify, what their particular standards are and monitor Internet access according to those rules.
Now, do you think that your software makes an indecency law unnecessary, or do you think that there are things that the law does or could do that your software could not?
I think the real issue is that they're complementary to one another. People are going to argue about what the correct standard of a legal definition is going to be, while the real benefit, the pragmatic middle ground for parents is, what am I comfortable with my children seeing, and do I have the ability to set that standard for myself? And I guess that's where you get into the real debate with the people who line up on one side or the other of this debate. We're really trying to represent the parental responsibility piece of this equation by providing a tool that that lets you do that.
Say I have a site that you've decided would be the kind of site parents would want to prevent their children from seeing. So,
mm-hmm.
Right, so your panel puts my site on their screened out list, right?
Right.
And I think you're really being unfair, that you don't understand that I'm using certain language to talk about medical things, or to really discuss something very literary or intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
What recourse would I have?
Simply send us a message and say, I don't think you guys are right. What we do when we review sites is we actually document, we print the material that was considered to be inappropriate. And again, we're talking here about inappropriate in the context of a typical 12-year-old child surfing the Internet alone. No parent, in an ideal world, the parent would be sitting right there with them, but the world doesn't work like that. And so Cyber Patrol is designed to provide an ability for a parent to extend their individual standards to the times when the children are surfing alone. So the only issue of debate comes when you're talking about material that would be inappropriate for a 12-year-old. And that's why we went to the model of teachers and parents, because they would have the best the best knowledge of the contemporary standard for that. But if in fact you felt that you had been incorrectly monitored, then you certainly would have the right of appeal. Just call us up and say, I think that's wrong. I'd like the site to be reviewed, and we will say, well, on the 5th of whatever, on a Wednesday afternoon, we visited the site, we saw this material, it was categorized thus. Has anything changed? And we'll go out and have a look. In the event that that fails, then we actually do have a review board where we can refer material that's been questioned or that is kind of just considered fringe to get a perspective that's outside our own. And we were sort of assisted in that particular effort by members of the various religious groups, and a group out in Northern California, actually, who thought they had been badly treated by us. It was the Gay and Lesbian Anti-Defamation group, who protested at some of the sites that we had, that we had restricted, because they had what they described as valuable information for young people who were unsure of their particular lifestyle.
What was your response to that?
Well, the answer was that was in fact true, but that wasn't why the material was restricted. The material was restricted because that also that very same material carried classified advertising for older men looking for younger men, and that was the piece that was restricted. They in fact, after we had explained why, they had a much more balanced response, and they now endorse the work that we do. So we try to be, again, we don't have a political agenda other than the general protection of the 12-year-old child. And against that background, we found that once we've explained what we're doing and why, that people have been generally supportive.
Nigel Spicer is president of Microsystems Software. Earlier today, we discussed the Communications Decency Act with Jerry Berman, executive director of the Center for Democracy and Technology, and Bruce Taylor of the National Law Center for Children and Families. Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Alan Tu, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, and Amy Sallet, with Kathy Wolf, Joan Tuohy, and Barbara Bogave. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from the Crown Publishing Group, publisher of Dinosaur in a Haystack, Reflections in Natural History by Stephen J. Gould, a Harmony book. Celebrating 25 years of radio excellence, this is NPR, National Public Radio.